This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending Friday, 24th of August, 2018. Welcome to this week's edition of the Hampshire Chronicle from the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper. Liz and Gordon Legg have edited the extracts this week. But we'll begin with the usual regular notice, and the first is to say, if you know someone who has sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording that you've received from us, please telephone Mary Davis on 020 380 273 473. That's 020 380 273 473. As you listen to the recording, remember that you can use the buttons on your box to move on from an item before it finishes, or back to any of the tracks if you want to listen again. One more reminder for those of you with computers or tablets. As well as using your memory stick in the box, you can also access the weekly recording of the Chronicle through our website, www.winchestertalkingnews.com. Now just go to the website, click on News on the header bar, locate the recording you want to hear, and click Download. The recordings are listed in date order, and the most recent is the first on the list. And so, let's have a look at this week's edition of the Chronicle. Our readers today are Claire Porter.
Hello.
Richard Martin.
Hello.
And Peter Walker.
Hello.
And I am your presenter, Ros Lydiard. So let's get on with the news then, shall we? The leading headlines. This week they are Secret Land Deal Agreed, Hampshire Mayor's 100,000 car bill, attacks on officers still on the increase. And the first headline story is from Claire, please.
Secret land deal agreed. Civic chiefs have approved a secret deal this week to buy a piece or pieces of land in the Silver Hill 2 area. The City Council is currently refusing to reveal where it is or how much taxpayers' money was spent. It comes after Winchester City Council hastily arranged an extraordinary meeting for Monday, but the only business item on the agenda was hidden from the public. It is thought the deal relates to the City Centre Friarsgate Medical Centre, which is currently owned by the TH Real Estate, THRE, the developers behind the original collapsed Silver Hill scheme. However, it has also been rumoured to relate to several properties fronting onto the Broadway, including the Gandhi restaurant, Subway, and two empty units next to Alfie's pub. Both sites fall within the Silver Hill 2 zone, officially known as the Central Winchester Regeneration Area. Recently, a supplementary planning document was agreed for the revamp of the area. The City Council has refused to confirm either, with a spokesman only saying that the Council has agreed the transaction. The 135-page document was discussed at the Guildhall on Monday evening, but Councillor Kim Gottlieb was excluded from the talks due to his business interest in owning the nearby St Clement's surgery. Speaking to the Chronicle, the independent councillor said, "The proposed acquisition of the Friarsgate surgery by the council is something I am happy to support. It is a prominent part of the Central Winchester Regeneration, CWR, area, and its future needs to be considered within the context of a master plan for the whole site. The purchase would bring THRE's 8-year involvement in this project to an end. Councillor Gottlieb added, "What's important is what happens next. However, just now the council should spare a thought and possibly a thank you for those many residents who, by resisting the Henderson scheme, created the opportunity for the council to make sure that this time the development of the site really is devised in the best interest of the city." The document was also debated earlier in the day by the Cabinet, again with it being held behind closed doors. Before members of the public were excluded, former Labour City Councillor Patrick Davies addressed councillors on the secrecy issue. He said, "It cannot be proper that the council is seeking to do business in this way. I can only assume it is a transaction to do with the CWR. It cannot be right this is the way it is being dealt with. Under the Local Government Act, a council can withhold information if it meets certain criteria, among them being information relating to the financial or business affairs." However, Mr. Davies highlighted a condition stating, "Information is not exempt information if it relates to proposed development for which the local planning authority may grant itself planning permission." City Council Corporate Head of Resources, Lisa Kirkman, said, "The intention is always to be transparent. Certainly there is a balance to be struck. I believe that is a correct exemption."
Hampshire Mayor's £100,000 car bill. Almost £100,000 of taxpayers' cash has been spent by Hampshire councils in the past 3 years on transport for their mayors, it's been revealed. Winchester City Council were the biggest spenders, splashing out £36,000, £12,000 a year, on a professional chauffeur company. Gosport Borough Council came in second with £17,993, 10 pence. £11,601, of which was shelled out on leasing an Audi A6, with £2,148, 7 pence on fuel. £650 of this cash was also spent on car washes. New Forest District Council totted up costs of £12,530, 30 on taxis. In total, £93,540, 90 pence was dished out across the county between April 2015 and March 2018 on transport for mayors, Lord Provosts and their equivalents. It comes as part of an investigation by the Taxpayers Allowance, the TPA, which sent out Freedom of Information requests. Its Chief Executive, John O'Connell, said, "Council's priorities should be on fulfilling their statutory obligations to the people who pay their salaries. To see Winchester City Council dishing out £12,000 a year on a chauffeur service is just not on." A council spokesman said, "The Mayor of Winchester plays a very important role, acting as the district's ambassador for all ceremonial activities. The majority of the Mayor's time is spent in supporting local community, voluntary and charitable organisations and local businesses that contribute to the well-being and social cohesion of the community. Over the past 3 years, the district's mayoralty has raised more than £95,000 for a range of different causes. To support this week, the Mayor attends more than 550 engagements each year in a district that spans 250 square miles. The Council recently reviewed the different transport options for the Mayor of Winchester, including leasing a vehicle, purchasing a vehicle, pool cars and employing a driver, but it was determined that the current approach remains the most cost-effective. East Hampshire District Council spent £11,528 on a hired car from January 2015 to June 2018.
Attacks on officers still on the increase. Police officers in Hampshire faced more than 1,000 assaults last year, new figures show. The Police Federation has welcomed the introduction of a new law which will allow tougher sentences for offenders. saying that officers should not have to consider assault, just part of the job. Figures from the Home Office show that between April 2017 and March 2018, 1,159 assaults against officers were recorded in the county. Of these, 407 caused injury. It is the first time that assaults causing injury have been recorded separately from those against members of the public. Assault against an officer without injury is recorded as a distinct offence. Numbers have been published since 2015-16, and they show an increase in recent years. In 2017-18, 752 offences were recorded, 25% up on 2015-16. John Apter, chairman of the Police Federation of England and Wales, said that the numbers are still likely to underrepresent the scale of the problem. He said, "This is an issue I feel passionately about, and I have long campaigned to have it addressed. Any attack on a police officer is unacceptable." And while I am glad that the Office for National Statistics and the Home Office are improving their data collection, I do not believe that these figures represent anywhere near the true picture of the violence our members face daily. Steps have been taken to improve the quality of the data. However, there is still work to be done to ensure that a true picture can be obtained. The Assaults on Emergency Workers (brackets offences) Bill will be passed into law this autumn. The fact that assaults are committed against emergency workers will be taken into account, particularly leading to tougher sentences. The National Police Chiefs Council lead on wellbeing, Chief Constable Andy Rhodes, said, "All too often, police officers and staff are subjected to assaults and threats. While the severity of such attacks changes, the impact upon society does not. It is never acceptable to assume that assaults upon police officers and police staff should be tolerated. They are simply not part of the job."
Thank you all very much. And we're going to go on to the death notices now, and that'll be followed by Christian comment, which Claire will read for us this morning. And so the death notices. Brown, Norman Henry Parson Brown, MBE. Eastleigh Citizen of Honour. Passed peacefully on the 10th of August, age 92.
Cook, Roy Cook. Sadly passed away on 15th August, 2018.
Cunningham. Valerie Irene May, née Piper, Cunningham. Went to sleep on the 5th of August.
Fremantle. Joe Henry Fremantle. Passed away peacefully, aged 80. Much loved by his six sons and their families. Reunited with his wife Pat and their daughter Mary.
Gradage. Clifford John Gradage. Passed away peacefully on the 15th of August. Aged 93 years.
Irwin. John Trevor Irwin. Sadly passed away on 14th August. Aged 77 years.
Lucas. Rex Lucas. Unexpectedly at home on the 10th of August, aged 78 years.
Nash Violet Joan, known as Babe, née Brown, of Hinton Ampner, passed on the 12th of August, aged 93 years.
White, Joan White, passed away on the 14th of August, aged 100. And we'll have Christian comment now, please, Claire.
This is written by Mark Collinson, who's Canon Principal, Winchester School of Mission, and he's headed the article, "Making a Difference." "I've just returned from Rwanda. I went with a small team from the Winchester Diocese School of Mission to learn from a church that is growing. We were hosted by the Bishop of Mayumba, Emmanuel, who is a jovial man and he always has a big smile on his face. It was through his diocese that the invading army of the Rwanda Patriotic Front swept in from Uganda during the war years that led up to the genocide of 1994. When the massacre started, those who hadn't been killed fled, and the land was unoccupied for 4 years. As families sought safety, they discovered who had survived and who had died. There were thousands of orphans. Emmanuel adopted 3 orphans from his own immediate family, and he adopted 4 orphans from his wife's immediate family. As refugees began to resettle back in their home districts, orphans still needed families. Over time, Bishop Emmanuel took in a further 11 children with whom he had no family ties whatsoever. He then received a call from the Social Services Department of the government. They asked him, "Could you take another child into your family? This one might be difficult, and you are the only person we could think of who might say yes." The child in question had become orphaned and survived in the forest. He had been adopted by a troop of monkeys, didn't walk on 2 legs, ate like a monkey, and defended his food like a monkey. He was a feral child who had literally lived in the bush. He was rescued by soldiers who extracted him from the bush without hurting the monkeys. Who would help him to grow up as a human being? Emmanuel said yes. It was the 19th child he and his wife adopted and parented. Our society has not suffered a genocidal upheaval like Rwanda, thank God. But an indication of the brokenness of society in England is that the number of children in social care who need adoption and fostering is over 50,000. And we need 5,900 more foster parents across the country. I heard about a charity called Home for Good that seeks to provide a home for every child who needs one. If one couple or person from every church in the country would either foster or adopt, then there wouldn't be any children waiting in social care for a home to live in. Of course, it doesn't have to be Christians that foster and adopt children, and most aren't. But the church needs to recognise that it has what it takes to stop children waiting for a home. If one couple in every church did offer a home for a child, it would be a demonstration to the nation that Jesus Christ's love cares for the least and the homeless. Home for Good answers many of the questions you may ask. Why not look them up and make a difference? And that was written by Mark Collinson, Canon Principal, Winchester School of Mission.
Thank you, Claire. And we are moving on to letters from the editor next. There's quite a mixed bag, but there's a concentration of subject on a need for a cultural centre, you'll hear. Peter, will you start us off with the first, please?
Yes, Ros, pleasure. This from Derek Newland, Chief Executive, Life Theatre Winchester, entitled Culture Centre. Sir, I noted with interest the front page article in this week's Hampshire Chronicle titled Culture Idea for Sports Centre Site. As Chief Executive of Life Theatre Winchester Trust, the cultural charity which provides both the Theatre Royal Winchester and Hat Fair for the people of and visitors to Winchester, I am all for more cultural opportunities in and around Winchester. Indeed, I am an enthusiastic advocate for putting creativity and culture right at the centre of Winchester's future identity and significant planned developments such as the Central Winchester Regeneration Project. I was, however, bemused by Keith Lehman's contribution to the article, when his short list of what the city had to offer culturally did not include the Theatre Royal or Hat Fair. He also suggested people were disappointed by the city's cultural offer. However, then I leafed through the rest of the paper and was reassured when no less than 5 different cultural events, spanning classic theatre, comedy, talks, contemporary dance and musical theatre, were featured in the 7 days supplement, all from the Theatre Royal's autumn season. Indeed, between now and the end of December, the Theatre Royal will present over 150 cultural performances across a diverse and exciting range of performing arts. I would humbly suggest to the City of Winchester Trust that Winchester is hardly a cultural desert, with such a rich range and choice of high-quality live performance on offer, right in the heart of our wonderful city.
And this from Phil Yates. City Council leader Caroline Horrell is entitled to her idea that the River Park Leisure Centre could be used for cultural arts, Chronicle, August 16, but this could be incorporated in the proposals for having a cultural centre on the bus station site, which could incorporate an arts centre, an Anglo-Saxon museum and a riverside walk as suggested at public meetings over the Silver Hill redevelopment. A central point is essential for such amenities. Winchester is lacking in having a proper concert hall, similar to Turner Sims in Southampton or the Lighthouse in Poole. Neither the Cathedral nor the Guildhall are entirely suitable for such occasions. Here we have a golden opportunity to convert the leisure centre into a superb concert hall. Food for thought, 58 Tower Street.
Increasing need for concert hall. We were pleased to see your headline on last Thursday's Chronicle, Culture Idea for Sports Centre Site. Since it is now more than 4 years since you published our letter suggesting that a smaller scale music space would be an invaluable addition to the city's facilities. While this was stimulated by the fact that the Winchester Chamber Music Festival was outgrowing the Discovery Centre, even more so 4 years on, it was also apparent that an auditorium for between 300 and 400 people, if carefully designed and executed, would serve not only music, but a wide variety of cultural, social and commercial purposes while complementing the city's existing facilities. It's good to see that the City Council is thinking positively about the reuse of the River Park site, and we will be delighted to contribute to its thinking in due course. Caroline and Richard York, Alison Way, Winchester.
Sir, I'm writing in support of your August 16 lead article, Culture, Idea for Sports Centre Site. Winchester lacks a decent-sized concert hall, so our young musicians, for example, Winchester Youth Orchestra and Peter Simmons College Orchestra, currently hold their concerts at the Anvil in Basingstoke, Thorndon Hall in Charnas Ford, and Turner Sims in Southampton. To use the River Park site to the full, I suggest it should double as a daytime art gallery and evening performance venue. This would both enhance the local community and be a draw for visitors. This from Hugh Payne, Alison Way, Winchester.
This letter is headed Bus Charge. Henry Mead's angry response to the County Council's suggestion that pensioners should be required to pay a 50p supplement every time they use their bus pass, Chronicle August the 9th, is fitting, and his protest should be taken up by all pass holders. I have sympathy with the plight of councils trying to balance their books in a period of rising demand for services, particularly for the elderly, and swinging cuts to funding by central government. This attempt to save money, however, is wrong-headed. In amending the legislation to protect the bus pass scheme, the government's buses minister said in April, "Being able to get out and about is hugely important for older and disabled people to keep their independence and play a role in their local community. Buses help connect people, homes and businesses, and nearly 10 million people in this country are already benefiting from free off-peak bus travel. A tax, for that is what it is, however small, on this valuable independence can only impact adversely on the demand for health-related services. It will also impact countywide on service industries where many pensioners will no longer be able to visit local places of interest, restaurants, pubs and cafes, and is likely to have a negative effect on vehicle usage by this age group. According to the media coverage, this proposal is being made as an alternative to making further cuts to bus services. The suggestion is that local people will willingly pay 50p per journey rather than lose services. This would seem to be verging on blackmail. In a country where the state pension is one of the lowest in Europe, any perks offered by the government must be protected. This proposal would open the gates to other councils nationwide. It will then not be long before the Hampshire 50p rate is increased in line with inflation. As the PM should say when Hampshire's request lands on her desk, free means free. Bruce Edwards, Brassey Road, Full Flood, Winchester.
This entitled Problem Shift. Sir, any improvements to Junction 9 are to be welcomed, but will such improvements reduce the congestion on the main routes around Southampton, Eastleigh and Winchester? Improvements of Junction 9 will move the bottlenecks further south, and the M3 will continue to be a bottleneck south of Winchester. What is needed is a strategic view of the traffic flow in our area, and then plans to relieve the congestion. I feel that the main problem is caused by the traffic flowing from Southampton and Portsmouth, including heavy traffic from the docks, using the M27 in both directions, wishing to travel to and from Birmingham, Manchester and beyond. The main route for this is the A34, and traffic must travel along the M27 onto the M3 and onwards to the A34. What is needed is a new motorway from Southampton to the north, completely avoiding the Winchester-Eastleigh conurbations. Costs could be reduced by making it a toll road, but HGVs should not be charged to encourage them to use the new road. This should take many of the HGVs off the A34 and hence the M3. In France, where new strategic links have been and are being built, they have found that HGVs tend to avoid toll roads because of the cost of the business. We are told that there is a sound business case for HS2, but a new road as proposed would perhaps benefit more people and would substantially improve links to the north from central southern England. This from Charles Bone, Old Kennels Close, Oliver's Battery, Winchester.
This letter from John P. Gore is headed Brexit Empire 1. In your August 9th edition, a review of the book Empire of Sentiment by Joanna Lewis was written by Andrew Napier. Obviously, the contents of the book are the opinion of the author and may well be challenged by a knowledgeable reader. My only comment to this is to question whether the three African former colonies mentioned are better administered and organised today than they were as British colonies, and are the people happier and better off now that they are fully independent? The thing about the reviews that upset me was using it as a means to denigrate Brexit, to insult the older members of the public and even include snide comments about Boris Johnson, which made a nonsense of the review. Political views are best reserved for the letters pages. As a regular reader of books on history, shall I purchase and read the book? Not now. John P. Gore, Nursery Road, Alsford.
Carrying on from that, this from Blair Southerton, entitled Brexit Empire 2. Sir, your reviewer, Andrew Napier, of Professor Lewis's new book, brackets Chronicle 7 days, August the 9th, close brackets, goes beyond a book review to express his opinion that the Victorian romantic images of empire and colonialism have influenced the decision to leave the European Union. Napier accuses voters of having, quote, a sentimental hankering for the supposed simplicity of being top dogs and on our own, unquote. The older generation that he accuses will have lived through the Second World War, i.e. born before 1939 and therefore 79 years old or older. This claim seems to be popular amongst some academic historians, but without any evidence being published to support their view. It is far more probable that an older generation remembers when this country was not dominated by unelected European civil servants and bound by treaties that strongly influenced British legislation. This from Blair Sutherland of Downs Road, South Wanston.
Home care. Plans are forging ahead for the wedding next year of my great niece, who makes an issue of referring to me as my great aunt. The couple have worked hard at their chosen careers and have already bought and furnished their own home. The family are looking forward to sharing their big day. The event will certainly be different to my wedding in 1948. My husband-to-be, John, had been a prisoner of war at a camp in Germany. He spent 2 years working in a coal mine, 12 to 15 hours a day, with one basic meal a day. It took a little time for him to regain his health after the war, but gradually he regained his strength, despite the fact that money was very tight and food and clothes were still rationed. We started married life living with John's brother and his wife and their baby daughter. Then a bungalow nearby became vacant and we moved in. On my wedding day, I wore a blue dress with accessories in the colour brown. We are not permitted to say these days. John had saved enough money to have a tailor-made three-piece suit for the occasion. It cost £4. For the past 10 years, since my John passed away, 3 weeks before our diamond wedding anniversary, that little baby niece has been my registered carer and two other nieces helped me as well. I refer to them as the three witches, but it's down to them that I can stay in my little home that is full of so many happy memories. The old adage, the salt of the earth, was never more appropriate. Daphne E. Smith, The Pastures, Cheriton.
And a letter about Boomtown, in case you thought you were going to get away without one. Boomtown has stated its intention to reduce capacity for this year's event, but its footprint and effect on wildlife and those of us who live locally has greatly increased. The size of the site has substantially increased. Increasing the site on higher ground has increased its visibility. It is now at the highest point of Cheesford Head. We taxpayers have spent a considerable amount of money by changing the streetlights of the South Downs National Park, where of course Boomtown takes place, so as to make it a dark area at night. The rationale of this expenditure was because of damage that bright lights at night might have on wildlife. In direct conflict with this objective, Boomtown has permitted, both before and during the festival, to project massively bright lights all night, causing light pollution greater than we've seen before. Did anyone in authority think what effect this, combined with the incessant noise, would have on animals, birds and humans alike? What concerns us most is that the South Downs National Park, our council representatives and the City Council are taking wholly inadequate steps to stop the disruption that Boomtown causes. Mrs. G. Haddo, Easton.
And that's all the letters we have for you this week. And our next item is Your Say, where Winchester's roving, or the Chronicle's roving reporter, asks people in Winchester what advice would they give to their 16-year-old selves if given the chance. Peter, please.
So, with GCSE results day looming, we asked people in Winchester what advice they would give their 16-year-old selves if given the chance. Matt Hall, 30, gym associate from Wells Road, Eastleigh, said, "Get your head down and try things because life's too short. 3 years ago, I stepped as a member into the gym I now work in. You just got to give things a go." Terry Shanahan, 66, ice cream seller of Park Road, Winchester, said, "I honestly can't think of an answer. It's one of those things you could give a million answers to. I just think I've learned through my experiences. Susan Bassett, retired from Winchester, said, I would put myself through a course studying medicine or nutrition. I've realised that's where my best abilities are. That's one of my few regrets, but I don't have many. James Crozer, 20, events manager from Winchester, said, I'd say that everything is not as bad as it seems, particularly college. I started by getting U grades and came out with an A star and 2 A grades. It will get better.
My word. So, does anybody here have any thoughts of what they would say to their 16-year-old selves? Richard?
Get out of bed.
I think that applies to most of us. And Claire, do you have any?
If you have a particular idea, go for it.
Hear, hear. So thank you very much, everybody. And if you have an opinion or a subject you'd like to air in the Hampshire Chronicle, you can contact them on 01962 860 836. That's 01962 860 836. Or you can email news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, or you could also write to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. And if you're around the place, you could even drop in and have a word with them in person. Now, the next thing up for us is Chronicle Comment, and this week the editor tackles violence against the police. He writes, it is a shocking statistic. There were more than 1,000 attacks on police officers in Hampshire last year. Figures from the Home Office reveal that between April 2017 and March 2018, 1,159 assaults against officers were recorded in the county. Of those, 407 caused injury, more than one a day. The numbers are worrying. The statistics published since 2015-16 show a steady increase. In 2017-18, 752 offences were recorded, 25% more than in 2015-16. John Apter, the chairman of the Police Federation of England and Wales, and formerly the Hampshire Federation boss, said the numbers are likely to underrepresent the problem. Changing the law to make it easier to give stiffer sentence to people who attack the police is to be welcomed. The government aims to have it on statute book by the autumn. But it does not go far enough. More research needs to be done to find out just why people are attacking officers. Perhaps academics are analysing. If not, they should be. Is it that cheap alcohol from the supermarkets is making men and women more likely to assault officers? Is it illegal drugs? Is it because more vulnerable people with mental health problems are in situations where confrontations are more likely? What about modern society? Is it that makes more people want to have a go? We just don't know. And we should. And the next item we have is First Person, which is by Kylie Daziz, and it's entitled Boris Burkas and Bans. Richard, can you read this one, please?
Yes. I've been urged by several readers to opine on Burkas. So, following on from fellow columnist Joanna Lewis's excellent piece last week, here's my two penneth. The subject's still very much alive, given the journalistic silly season, and Boris Johnson's refusal to apologise. Declaring an interest, half my formative years were spent in an Islamic environment and the other half in Christian society. Both instances were on the liberal wing of each religion. There was little talk during my days in Pakistan of jihad, except in history lessons citing 8th century conquerors such as Muhammad bin Qasim and later the Moors, whom the Spanish have to thank for some of their better architecture. In England, Christianity was limited to church parade with the Cubs and Scouts and the singing of a solitary hymn during school assembly. No bells and smells or rigid diktats on how to live life other than to strive to be better. The Islamic side of the family was Sunnis and tended to favour a Sufic approach, which could be summed up as don't frighten the horses. Our women seldom covered their heads except when at prayer and never their faces. Women who affected the hijab, niqab or full-on burqa were regarded as curiosities and not quite our type, coming as they did predominantly from rural areas and as such regarded as backwards. Indeed, in the Pakistan of the 1960s, barely 20 years after partition, such women were rarities on the streets of Lahore and Karachi. Today it's different. Attitudes have hardened. We have imams preaching hate and radicalising young British Muslims to a new jihad, which far from, as defined in the Quran, going to the aid of Muslims in distress, seeks to get the retaliation in early, to the bomb, and latterly the recklessly driven vehicle. On the Christian side, it seems social media is the main arm of aggression. I have a good friend who regularly posts on Facebook anti-Islamic, some would say Islamophobic, clips of rabid white hate speakers, mainly from the US, but some from closer to home. I'm not sure what he hopes to achieve, apart from letting off steam. Certainly, it doesn't do much to take the heat out of the situation, and perhaps reduces him in stature to that of the very people he despises. Which then brings us to Boris. Of course, he's entitled to have a view about face covering. I tend to share that view, particularly when it comes to areas where the face is important. You cannot submit a passport photo with your face covered, although I've yet to witness, coming through airport immigration, a woman being asked to remove her veil. The teaching of children is a key area too. Children, particularly small ones, gain comfort from seeing a friendly face, so why cover it up? Juries need to see the face of a witness to help them make fine judgments. Where most agree Boris was wrong was to use the language of the 4L bar to add force to his argument. It shows a real lack of self-awareness when someone who until recently held one of the great offices of state. But Boris doesn't do self-awareness. Witness his curious garb when he served tea to the hacks camped outside his Oxfordshire home, waiting for an apology. Pound shop shorts and lace-up boots with ankle socks, revealing what Greg Dyke would surely describe as hideously white legs, despite several days in the Tuscan hills. He looked, as Boris would no doubt say, a right plonker. We expect more from our senior politicians. So, join France and Denmark and ban the burqa? No. We British are better than that. It's personal choice. But women should be aware that to many it looks as like they're being oppressed by culture and not observing religion. Is that really how they want to come across?
Thank you, Richard. And Peter now is going to read us George Hollingbury's contribution to Westminster Diary, please.
Donald Trump certainly continues to be controversial. Everyone from the left and even the centre-right of just about every country in the world are, at times, unhappy with the man. Everything from American newspapers not liking his attacks on them, to criticising his own intelligence agencies, plus the continuing outrage over his comments and policies to curb illegal immigration, are just a few of the latest skirmishes for this most combative of presidents. He is a figure of hate and lampooning in equal measure, but I think this is giving some people the misapprehension President Trump is dumb. Only a glance at social media will reinforce it, but I have to say I'm of the view he's most certainly not. True, he absolutely shoots from the hip and says some pretty outrageous things at times, but he's not the only politician to do so. They're all over the world right now, probably copying the man himself. I say I don't think he's dumb, because most of the issues he's criticising, like the China trade imbalance, Iran's nuclear capability, the European Union, the vast majority of NATO countries not funding their military sufficiently, or World Trade Organization rules aren't unreasonable targets. Certainly, what he says sometimes knocks friends, as well as foes, off balance. But I cannot believe that it's not deliberate. And, I have to say, these disruptive techniques can be effective. Take North Korea, for example. The previous president, Barack Obama, made little progress with the country at all. The jury's out on what Trump's meeting with Kim Jong-un will mean, but it could be something more than was achieved over the previous 8 years. This article is not an endorsement of the president, because all the techniques, the deals, the comments and policies make it incredibly hard for the rest of the world to work out what he wants, whether it's deliberate or not. This is clearly a big problem, and it has allowed certain leaders, like President Putin, airtime and credibility at a time when tensions are very strained between Britain and Russia, for example. This might be a new era of how powerful leaders operate, because Trump is and will continue to be emulated, and I understand many people are unhappy with that thought. But he's changed the political landscape, and that's certainly not the actions of someone who doesn't know what he's doing. Also, disagreeing with the man, which I find myself doing quite often, doesn't make him dumb either. And we all have to be careful to listen and evaluate what he says, not simply dismiss it. Don't underestimate him has to be the mantra. This from George Hollingbury, MP for Meon Valley. It's the Minister of State for Trade Policy.
Thank you, Peter. And now we have three items from Belgarum. And Richard has the first for us, please.
Yes, and this story accompanies a picture of a sorry-looking tree. Sorry sight after tree fell due to fungus. This is all that's left of a once magnificent lime tree that stood on the weirs in Wichita city centre. The tree had to be cut down by city council officials after they discovered that the tree had contracted a fungus that would have made it unstable and unsafe. Last month, the tree was cut down in stages by tree surgeons until nothing remained but this small, sad stump. A city council spokesman has reassured Belgarum that the tree will be replaced in due course.
The disappearing line. Now you see it, now you don't. There has been parking space for six cars on Wales Street, where it meets Eastern Lane in Winnell, for decades. Except, last week, council contractors painted a yellow line along it. That annoyed veteran businessman Keith Webb, who owns the adjacent business park, once a farm, for something like 60 years. The parking is useful for customers coming and going. Mr. Webb pointed out that councils have to go through procedures before they introduce parking controls. They did it without any authorisation, without any notice. I'm really cross about it. Street parking in Winchester is disappearing, he told Belgarum on Friday. But, lo and behold, on Monday, council contractors removed the line. Mr. Webb added, to be fair, they got off their butts pretty quickly. They've done a lovely job removing it. Now, all they need to do is put a mini roundabout on Eastern Lane at the junction of Winnell Manor Road and Moorside Road. That would ease the flow of traffic. It was unclear if it was city or county contractors at fault.
Thank you. On to historical items with the usual mini news clips starting with 200 years ago. And this one could have been written in 2018, but it was Monday, August the 24th, 1818. It is a very singular coincidence that in 1718, at the distance precisely 100 years from the present, the weather was extremely hot and dry all over Europe. The air felt so oppressive that all the theatres were shut in Paris. The grass and corn were quite parched, and in some areas the fruit trees blossomed two or three times. The following year was equally hot, as was 2018. And on to 100 years ago, please.
Saturday, August the 24th, 1918. Henry White, Esquire, County Coroner, held an inquest at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital on Monday afternoon, touching the death of Peter Clark, aged 42, a labourer, working at Flowerdown Camp, Winchester, and whose home address was Dundalk, Ireland. Mr. William McCarthy attended as representative of the United Builders Labourers Union, of which the deceased was a member, and the coroner intimated that he might put any questions that he wished, through him, to the jury. David Harrison, a fellow labourer at the camp, formally identified the body, stating that the deceased was in the employ of Messrs. Parkinson's, the contractors. Lieutenant Sidney Aspinall, RAF, officer in charge of the wireless school, Flower Down, deposed that about 10:15 on Saturday morning, a motor lorry was entering with a load of coal, and on a given signal from the deceased himself, the vehicle moved forward. The iron brackets on the off side of the lorry did not clear, with the result that a pier and part of the wall was demolished, some of it falling on the deceased.
And 50 years ago, Saturday, August the 24th, 1968. Without venturing into many new fields of subject matter or technique, the Winchester Art Club have nevertheless succeeded in maintaining a high standard of painting at their annual exhibition. It opens officially today at the Museum, Winchester College, and continues until September the 5th. The standard is especially notable because most of the artists come from the very small area around Winchester, and although there are over 350 entries this year, the judges have had to choose only 230 to hang. This year the exhibition was organised by Mr. Tom Oxford. And secondly, Mr. and Mrs. Stanley Richardson of Chilbolton Avenue, Winchester, have just returned from an entomological exhibition on the banks of Lake Baikal in eastern Siberia, bringing with them vivid impressions of Russia and, in particular, the vast scale of scientific education, research and development, which is already in being and is very obviously growing at an astounding rate. There were guests of the universities of Moscow, Irkutsk and Novosibirsk, and were permitted to circulate and investigate anything which they were interested. They were highly impressed by the high standards of equipment and learning in the biological laboratories. They found the people everywhere were extremely friendly, and particularly so when they learned that they were English. Very few English people have penetrated as far as Irkutsk in the last 50 years.
Very nice pronunciation there, if I might say so, Richard.
I just made it up.
25 years ago, Friday, August the 20th, 1993. Building societies will dominate the centre of Winchester High Street as four of the leading mortgage lenders relocate to larger premises vacated by shops. Abbey Nationals has already opened a new branch in the centre of the pedestrian precinct, where it is to be joined by its rivals, the Halifax, Woolwich and Nationwide. Winchester City Council originally refused planning permission for the Abbey National and Woolwich developments, but the decision was overturned at appeal. Planning Officer Steve Opakic explained, permission was also turned down for the Halifax, which was going to appeal. But in the light of former decisions, we asked them to resubmit an application, and the planning committee reluctantly had to take a different view. We have also allowed Nationwide to come in since the appeals. The council recently redefined its prime shopping area to restrict non-retail developments in the centre. The earlier two appeals showed that our policies are not going to be supported. With the new local plan, we need to come up with a policy that we can defend, said Mr. Opakic. But by then, the building societies will be firmly established in the heart of the city centre, as chain stores and independent retailers continue to pull out of the high street. Mr. Opakic, I'm apologising for the pronunciation, but I don't know any more, but he said legal agreements had been made to ensure that the present Halifax branch at 1 Southgate Street could only be used for retail purposes. The Halifax is to move into the former Manfield shoe shop at 129 High Street, which closed last week. David Huck, the retail director of estate agents Goadsby and Harding, who oversaw the sale of the premises, explained, "Manfield is part of the British Shoe Corporation empire, which has sold the residue of the lease to the Halifax Building Society, who were looking for larger premises in a better location." Asked why Manfield had decided to leave Winchester, he replied, "I think it's due to the general consolidation for the footwear industry generally. There has been a programme of rationalisation of all major shoe retailers over the last 2 to 3 years." The second section. Workmen demolishing a derelict cottage were saved a job when it was burnt to the ground. Fire broke out at the cottage in Chilcombe on Monday as workmen tried to remove oak panelling for salvage. The cottage, situated near to the parish church, was constructed of wood and corrugated iron. It was to be demolished for redevelopment on the site. The blaze started at midday. Winchester firefighters attended the scene with two appliances. A fire spokesman said, "Workmen were cutting the wood away with a disc cutter when sparks set alight to it. All the water and electricity mains had been cut off. We guarded the scene for about 4 hours." He said the cottage was completely destroyed, apart from two main chimney stacks.
Thank you all, and we're going to move on now to what's on in the region over the next couple of weeks. Well, I'm going to start off with a casting of a production that's going to be in the Great Hall in Winchester. It's called Sir Walter's Women, and that's Sir Walter Raleigh we're talking about. And it just says that casting is complete for this famous explorer, and the performance admission is free, but tickets can be booked to ensure entry, and they can be reserved on the Winchester Heritage Open Days website. That's Sir Walter's Women in the Great Hall in Winchester on September the 14th and 15th. I personally am looking forward to that enormously. And on to music, the Chamber Music Festival, the Church of St John the Evangelist in West Meon will be hosting a weekend of classical chamber music, and that will be September the 14th to the 16th. Pieces performed will be those written around the time of the end of the First World War, which ended in November 1918. Tickets then can be purchased from the West Meon Musical Festival website. The West Meon Musical Festival website. And on to more music in the cathedral. Lunchtime concerts, says this article, have been running for over 20 years, bringing to the cathedral hundreds of talented musicians, demonstrated skills on almost every instrument possible. All are welcome. The recitals are free, with a retiring collection. And here it mentions in the Winchester Cathedral lunchtime recitals on Tuesday, August the 28th, Ben Shear, organ, will be the performer for that particular day. We're on to sport already. Country Sports Day returns to Tichborne. Excitement is building for the Countryside Alliance Hampshire Country Sports Day at Tichborne Park near Alresford on Sunday, September the 9th. The best that the countryside has to offer will be on show, with a range of exhibitions and displays, as well as have-a-go activities and competitions. So the gates will open at 9:30 a.m. That will be on September the 8th. And the main ring events start at 10 a.m, with the programme running until 5:30 p.m. Entry is £12 for adults, and under 14s are free. And that's the Country Sports Day in Titchbourne Park. And that's it for what's on for the time being. Before we go on to the general news, there are some lighting up times to give you. Starting on Saturday, the 26th of August, the sun will set at 8:06 p.m. And on Wednesday, the 29th of August, the sun will rise at 6:14 a.m. and will set at 7:58 p.m. And you can't help saying those winter evenings are drawing close. And now the general news. And I think Richard has a starter for us. What is that, please?
It's prisoners forced to share single cells. Overcrowding at Winchester Prison is forcing prisoners to share cells, eating, sleeping, and even using the toilet in spaces designed for one. The latest Ministry of Justice figures show that 607 prisoners were crammed into just 439 spaces in July. Campaigners say that the unchecked rise of the prison population is responsible for the huge increase in assaults on staff and inmates. This culminated in the government taking over Her Majesty's Prison Birmingham from its contractor G4S after a damning inspection report. One of the government's first actions was to move hundreds of inmates to other jails, reducing the overcrowding. According to July's figures, Winchester Prison is more overcrowded than Birmingham. The prison service measures its own capacity in terms of certified normal accommodation, the number of prisoners it says it can accommodate in the good, decent standard of accommodation that the service aspires to provide for all prisoners. However, with the majority of prisons overcrowded, it also has a separate measure called operational capacity. This is the maximum number of prisoners the prison service says each institute can safely handle while maintaining control and security. In July, Winchester's number stood at 93% of operational capacity. Prisoners contain a number of one- and two-person cells. In overcrowded prisons, more inmates will be put in cells they were originally designed to hold. Annual figures published by the prison service in July show the extent of the problem. From April 2017 to March 2018, 51% of prisoners in Winchester Prison were in overcrowded cells, 332 inmates on average. Prison Reform Trust Director Peter Dawson said overcrowding isn't simply a case of being forced to share a confined space for up to 23 hours a day where you must eat, sleep and go to the toilet. It directly undermines all the basics of a decent prison system, including work, safety and rehabilitation. There's been a renewed focus on prison policy after the government took control of HMP Birmingham. A shocking inspection found inmates used alcohol, drugs and violence with impunity, while the corridors were covered with cockroaches, blood and vomit.
Oh.
This is entitled Police Appeal for Witness to Attack in City Centre. Police are hunting a witness after a man was struck with a torch on a busy city street. Two men were involved in a verbal dispute before one of them struck out at the other on Upper Brook Street, Winchester, on Wednesday, August the 15th, between 6 p.m. and 6:50 p.m. The victim, a man in his 20s, suffered facial injuries as a result of the incident and was taken to the Royal Hampshire County Hospital. Officers had been told that a smartly dressed man ran over from Brook's shopping centre delivery area and we would like to speak to him about what he saw. This man is described as Asian, aged in his mid-30s, 5'11" tall, and wearing a pale shirt and pale suit trousers. Hampshire Constabulary also want to speak to anyone who may have information about the incident. It also confirmed a 20-year-old man of no fixed abode has been arrested on suspicion of causing grievous bodily harm and remains in custody at this time. Anyone with information is asked to contact police on 101, quoting, this is now an 11-digit crime number, 4418-0309-743, or call the charity Crime Stoppers anonymously on 0800 555 111.
Employment hits record high level. Employment in Hampshire hit a record high last year with almost 1 million residents in work. This was up 25,600 people on 2016 and was the largest employment rate for shire counties across the country, 905,600, 79.8% of the population. The amount in work was also higher than the national average, which recorded 74.7%. Unemployment also reached new lows in the county, with only 26,900, 2.8%, out of work. This was down 12,400 residents on the previous year. Nationally, 4.1% of the population are out of work. It was also found that 2,780 new businesses set up shop in the county, pushing the total to 85,770. Although the figure went up, it was noted that the increase of 3.3% lagged behind the UK average of 4%. This helped push the Hampshire economy to £49.7 billion, with an £830 million, 1.7% growth. However, this was also behind the UK average of 3.7%. The authority's economic head, Councillor Mel Kendall, said, "One of our main priorities as a county council is to support and develop a prosperous economy in Hampshire, so it remains a great place to live and work. Supporting the creation of good jobs for local people is key, and we want to ensure we take every opportunity to encourage businesses to invest here. A skilled and active workforce available is an important consideration for potential employers. Having the highest employment rate of any shire county is, of course, very good news, but we are not complacent and recognise that we must continue to work hard to support meaningful job creation for all. Our focus includes supporting schools to ensure we have skilled and qualified young people entering the job market, working with colleges and universities to promote higher level training and qualifications where appropriate, and increasingly supporting the development of apprenticeship opportunities, not only for the younger generation, but to ensure there are opportunities for lifelong learning and skills development. The biggest growth for the county came from the aerospace and defence business sector. In 2017, 115 new firms set up in Hampshire, up 2.6%. This pushed the sector amount to 4,470 businesses. The sector also employed an additional 2,000 staff, 5.1% growth, to increase the total to 43,000. The county's two other major sectors, marine and maritime and tourism, both saw a dip in its workforce, both losing 1,000 staff. In total, both employed a combined 112,000 workers. Nevertheless, 110 new marine firms set up in the county, 3,375 in total, with an additional 40 being created in the tourism sector, 5,985.
Night shelter opens new home for former residents. For 20 years, Winchester Church's night shelter has provided crisis accommodation to homeless people. Now it's branching out with a housing project in memory of former resident Ben Blythe. Ben's house will soon become home to four former night shelter residents. The supported housing project is dedicated to Ben, who died in 2010, aged 33. He suffered from a complex and incurable mental health condition and spent months living homeless, receiving support from local agencies, including the night shelter. The house has been funded by a donation from the military charity, the DFLOG VQ Trust, founded by Ben's father, Brigadier Tom Blythe. It was wound down after 20 years of providing qualifications to military personnel across the world, and as a result, a £1 million bequest was given to Winchester's two homelessness charities, the Night Shelter and Trinity Winchester. The new project will enable residents who are ready to move on from the 17-bed Night Shelter on Jury Street the chance to access affordable accommodation. Michelle Price, Night Shelter manager, said, "Our new rental home for independent living has only been made possible by the incredible generosity of the DFLOG VQ Trust. At a time of funding cuts to the homelessness sector, it's more important than ever for charities like ours to provide an effective pathway out of homelessness for the vulnerable and socially excluded. Our support doesn't stop when people leave the shelter. In some ways, that's when the real challenges begin for many of our residents. So by extending our services to offer supported move-on accommodation, we can prevent more people slipping back into homelessness." The night shelter now provides two rental homes for independent living, bringing the number of move-on bed spaces to 8. Night shelter staff and supporters, including Ben's parents, Brigadier Blythe and Sylvie, son Alex, gathered at the house located outside Winchester to unveil a plaque.
And this is about a recent event entitled Winchester's Red Hot Chili Festival. A Hampshire festival drew the crowds to celebrate the tastes of cheese and chili. The Winchester Cheese and Chili Festival at Bar End drew hundreds of people to enjoy the food-themed event at the weekend. There was a man versus food competition, testing competitors' endurance of potent chilies, to more sedate cooking demonstrations, live music and face painting. George Bran was the winner of the Man versus Food Challenge, gobbling down a fire hot dog with Mexicana cheese. Children were entertained by Alfredo El Mago, the magician. The festival hit the headlines last month after it cancelled plans to host pig racing, following a petition that gained more than 46,000 signatures. The organisers disputed that the racing was cruel, but bowed to pressure from people around the world who supported the online campaign.
Vickers' descendants recreate ringing. On November 11th, 1918, church bells across the land rang out to announce the end of the First World War. Now, a Hampshire family will recreate those joyful sounds when they join thousands of other campanologists across England to recreate the historic day. Claire Partridge, who's 30, from Chandlersford, will ring the bells in St Mary's Church, Bishopstoke, as part of Ringing Remembers, a national campaign to honour the male bell ringers who lost their lives in the Great War. Her great-great-grandfather, Robert Shepherd Routh, was the vicar of St Mary's Church in Lonstock, near Stockbridge. He wasn't called to fight, but most of the male bell ringers in his parish were, meaning that women from the village had to step in to sound the bells. Claire, a project manager at Southampton University, says bell ringing is a very inclusive activity, and she comes from a long line of bell ringers. Claire said, "It's a uniquely English thing. No one else in the world does it, but you can be involved at any level. You don't ever really become an expert because there's always something else to learn. It's so inclusive because you can do it at any level." On Armistice Day, it was said that the bell ringing wasn't very good, because the women could only do it when they felt able. The English style is all patterns and meant to be very rhythmic. Claire and her family got together at St Mary's in Lonstock on Sunday to recreate a photograph of her great-great-grandfather and the female bell ringers he recruited. The aim is to encourage others to join the Ringing Remembers campaign. The November 11th event will see the vast majority of England's 5,500 bell towers brought back to life by bell ringers new and old. Organisers from Ringing Remembers are encouraging others to get involved, even if they've never rung a bell before. Jamie Singleton from Ringing Remembers said, "There's still plenty of time to learn enough to take part in November. If you would like to take part, contact your local church or go to the Ringing Remembers website. Ringing Remembers hopes to track down the women in the photographs with Reverend Routh. It is led by Big Ideas and the Central Council of Church Bell Ringers, supported by the Ministry of Housing and Communities."
Council cutting carbon emissions. Civic chiefs have slashed Winchester City Council's carbon emissions by almost a tenth over a 12-month period, according to a new report. Councillors heard at a meeting earlier this week that it had reduced its footprint by 9.1% during the year to April 2017. It comes after a raft of changes in the district to make Winchester a greener place to live, including slashing the amount of documents printed at the council, upgrading to more efficient lighting, and plans to introduce curbside glass recycling next year. Councillor Steve Miller, portfolio holder for estates, told councillors, "I'm pleased to say that this report shows that carbon footprint for that year represented a 9.1% reduction on the previous year, and is some 22.5% below the baseline year of 2009-10. These figures illustrate, therefore, that the council is making good progress in reducing its carbon footprint, with the aim of achieving a 20% reduction by 2020-21. As previously reported, the City Council plans to introduce a curbside glass collection at a cost of £100,000 in early spring, if the council continues with its existing contractor, as part of six new council pledges. Another of those is setting up a fly-tipping hit squad with covert cameras to catch offenders and a rapid response team to clear up across the district. Carbon emissions figures for the year to April 2018 were unavailable at the time of going to press.
And this is about a new art shop. The art shop at Winchester School of Art is opening next month with a new operator. CASS, that's C-A-S-S, Art, is opening the shop to be called CASS Art Campus on September the 24th. It will be the first CASS Art store located on a university campus since founder Mark CASS opened his first shop in London in 1984. The store on Park Avenue will stock the world's leading brands such as Winsor & Newton, Liquitex, De La Roni, Derwent, as well as the expanding range of CASS art products, which now include artists' quality paint and canvas. As well as catering for students, CASS Art Campus will be open 52 weeks a year to serve the wider creative community. Mark CASS said, "This is our 13th shop to open in the UK, and a very exciting new concept. Students are the lifeblood of CASS Art. They are the artists of the future. We know that while studying a creative course is a journey of experimentation and personal development, but it also comes with a challenge of tight budgets. By providing students with affordable art supplies, we aim to support them throughout this exciting journey. Our staff artists will be thrilled to welcome the local creative community too. We have something to offer artists of any standard and age." The Director of External Affairs at Winchester School of Art, Kay May, said, "I am absolutely delighted that CASS Art will be joining us at our beautiful campus in Winchester."
Environment bosses to monitor river for pollution. Environment bosses will continue to monitor a Hampshire river following reports of an oily substance in the water. The Environment Agency said it will keep a close eye on a stretch of the Monk's Brook in Eastleigh after residents reported an oil-like substance in the water. Jane Marucci, who's 43, from Eastleigh, said she was walking her dog on Sunday when she noticed an oily substance in the stretch of river between the pavilion on the park and Places Leisure, Eastleigh. There was a strong smell like paint, and we thought it was a bit unusual around that area, the accounting technician said. When we approached a part of the river where people let their dogs in the water, there was oil in the water. It was a lot, and it made the whole river smell. Ian Walton, Environment Agency team leader, said, "We found no oil on the Monk's Brook, but we will monitor the situation, and if further oil is found, then we will investigate further."
Zoe heads to college in Georgia, courtesy of Rotary. Winchester student Zoe Hopper is the latest successful candidate for the Georgia Rotary Student Programme. Zoe, a Peter Simmons College student from Rumsey, will spend a year at a college in Georgia in the American Deep South, starting this month. The programme, set up by Rotary clubs in the state of Georgia, allows students from all over the world to take up a scholarship, providing they meet certain criteria and are recommended by a Rotary club in their home country. On July the 23rd, Zoe met the Mayor of Winchester and his wife, along with the President of Winchester Rotary. Winchester Rotary is Zoe's sponsor. Accompanying them was Winchester Rotarian Steve Feeney, who now coordinates applications. Steve has taken on the role from Rotarian Dennis Wellstead, who passed away in March. Dennis was instrumental in bringing the Georgia Rotary Student Programme to Winchester, and for several years he identified students from the area. Steve said Dennis's enthusiasm was well known and he'll be a hard act to follow. "We'd very much like more young people to apply. It's a wonderful opportunity to spend a year in Georgia. Too good an opportunity to miss." Full details can be found on the website www.grsp.org. If you're aware of anyone who might be interested, email grsp@winchesterrotary.org.
And the final article is regarding tributes to an old soldier. Tributes have been paid to a veteran who raised more than £1 million for the Royal British Legion. Lifelong Eastleigh resident Norman Brown died on August the 10th, aged 92. He was the backbone for Hampshire's poppy appeal for more than 20 years and was the president of Eastleigh, Chandlesford and District Branch of the Royal British Legion. He served with the Royal Engineers in France and Belgium during the Second World War and became county coordinator for the poppy appeal in 2003. In 2009, Mr. Brown was made an MBE for his service to Hampshire's Royal British Legion, which he joined in 1992. Eastleigh MP Mims Davis said he was a true gentleman, absolutely committed to bringing the local community together, supporting veterans and service men and women. Paul Capper, chairman of Eastleigh, Chandlesford and District Branch of the Royal British Legion, added, "He was simply Mr. Eastleigh, being one of the old school gentlemen of his era, totally dependable, quiet, kind, and just one of life's treasures, the like of whom we will never see again."
Thank you very much. Thank you all. That concludes our extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for you this week. But before we go, I'll give you another reminder that Mary Davis is the person to call if you have any problems with your recording. Her number again is 020-380-273-473. And it just remains for me to thank all the support teams for the preparation and dispatch of this edition, to our editors, Gordon and Liz, thank you very much, and of course, many thanks to our readers, Claire,
bye,
Richard,
goodbye,
and Peter,
goodbye.
And from me, Roz, goodbye. Please remember to put the address label on the wallet into the wallet when you finish with the item and return it to us. Thank you very much and have a good week ahead.